Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Rising Laterally podcast. This is Arjun Sachdev.
And this is Jay Ballou. We hope you find something here that offers you new meaning or a fresh perspective.
If you do, we encourage you to give it life.
Be bold.
Experiment.
And most importantly, bring it into the interactions with the people you surround yourself with.
And see what happens. Today we are joined by a living legend. Dean Karnazes is the ultra marathon man. He once ran 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states. He was named by Time Magazine as one of the 100 most influential people in the world in 2007. His life has been made into a movie. He's a New York Times bestselling author, having written Ultra Marathon Man and his latest book, A Runner's High, which is officially available now. He lives in Marin, which is in North Bay in California. He enjoys running with his daughter, and he's also run 350 miles without stopping, eating, or sleeping. The man has raced on all seven continents twice and carried the Olympic torch twice. His passion and commitment to running can be applied to any aspect of life for any human being old enough to listen to podcasts. So call it age 12 or up. It's why we asked him to come join us today so he can share his inspiring story. Dean, welcome to the Rising Laterally podcast.
Thanks for having me run by.
So do you actually remember an article that was written about you late last year? It was in Marin Living magazine. It was about how running can help people during lockdown. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember the article. Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's how this whole thing actually came together, because during quarantine, I fell in love with running. It's something that I never actually did. But my wife and I own a Peloton, and we were living in San Diego, and there was just no way that I was going to bike indoors all the time. So I started running. And as I started building endurance, you know, 50 miles, 60 miles, 70 miles per month, which I know is nothing for you, but that was like the most I've ever run in my life. My wife actually left the article on my desk, probably as like confirmation or inspiration. And so I ended up reading it. And I remember telling her, like, in that moment, I'm going to get this guy on the show. And it was also the time when Jay and I like decided to focus on authors, and it all came together. You know, fast forward 5 months from that point, and here we are sharing some space. I think it's pretty special.
Well, I'm curious, how did your wife come across the magazine? Did she get it in San Diego?
She's from Marin. Her and her family are from Marin. She went to Berkeley, and we met up in San Francisco. And we actually moved to San Diego in March of 2020 as things were shutting down. So all of this is like a whirlwind. Yeah. And I know it's also a special day for you because today, you know, May 3rd, 10 years ago, you were running across the country, LA to New York City. And on that route, you stopped by the South Lawn of the White House and you had a chance to meet Michelle Obama. And I know that this was also the morning after Bin Laden was killed. So you didn't get a chance to meet the president, but you got to meet his dog at least.
Yeah, it's funny because someone said, I wrote about that experience in my book, A Runner's High, my most recent book. And someone asked me they said that White House chapter was hilarious. What year was that? And I started thinking, what year? You know, I can't remember a lot of these things I do because I've done a lot of them. So I started thinking back on the year, and I thought, how can I place the year? Well, it was, you know, the night before the Osama bin Laden was killed. So just look up that date. And I looked up that date, and it was May 2nd. So I thought, the next morning I ran to the White House, so it must have been May 3rd.
So I know a moment ago I just brought up that example of manifestation where I had the thought of bringing you on, then we took the action, and we finally got here. And there's... the reason I bring that up is because many times on our show, we've talked about manifestation and surrounding yourself with expanders. These are the people that show you how things are getting done. They show you a process from A to Z. But when I think about you and having read both of your books, obviously you've manifested your entire life through running, and you've served as an expander for so many people across the world. So why don't we actually start with the day or the night that changed your life, which was your 30th birthday in San Francisco. Tell us what happened that night.
Yeah, well, I was doing what you do on your 30th birthday. At least a lot of people do. I was in a bar getting drunk with my buddies.
Nice.
And you know, I wasn't a runner. I loved to run when I was a kid, and I stopped running when I was a freshman in high school after the cross country season. So I went through college, I went through graduate school, and then I went through business school. and I had a comfortable job in San Francisco, but I was unhappy. I was kind of miserable, actually. And at midnight, I said to my buddies, "Hey, I'm going to leave the bar." And they said, "Well, it's your 30th birthday. Let's have another round of tequila to celebrate." And I said, "No, I'm going to celebrate instead by running 30 miles right now." Whoa. And they looked at me and they said, "But you're not a runner. You're drunk." And I said, "Yeah, I am drunk, but I'm still going to do it." So I walked out of the bar. I didn't even own running gear at the time, but I had on these like silk boxer shorts, these silk underwear. So I remember peeling off my pants and just stumbling into the night, so, you know, going south.
Yeah.
The city of Half Moon Bay was 30 miles away.
Wow.
So I set my sights on Half Moon Bay. Yeah.
And did you get all the way there?
It wasn't pretty. There was some groveling and some chafing where the sun don't shine.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. Straight through the night. I ran.
Unbelievable.
Miles. Yeah.
And that's corporate. As a corporate refugee myself, I can definitely empathize with your feelings around how that could be sort of an unfulfilling life. And now as an aspiring entrepreneur, can empathize with you in terms of like making your own choices, constructing the life that you want to live. And at times it's going to be super uncomfortable, but at the same time, it's very rewarding when things start to come together. So, you know, you obviously started running that night. That was more than 20 years ago. But really, in looking back on your life, it seems like you've been doing adventurous things since you were young. You described your childhood and some of the things that you were doing on the weekends with your family as if you were living, quote unquote, the outdoor magazine before there was an outdoor magazine. So what was that experience like? And what was it like for you growing up?
You know, it was a different era. There wasn't any rules in my household when I was a kid. I mean, we were free to roam and it was safe to roam back then. So, and I love to roam. I love nothing more than to get outside and explore. And, you know, my parents were outdoors people. So, you know, we spent my childhood hiking in California, all around California, hiking and exploring. And to me, that's kind of how I related to the world, is through exploration of the outdoors. It's such a different, experience than most kids these days, where they're so much of their time is spent looking at a screen. Imagine if you spent all that time instead in the outdoors. And that's kind of how my life was.
One of the stories you shared was when you were 12 years old, you climbed 14,500 feet of Mount Whitney. That's pretty fascinating. And, you know, it's funny because your view on running isn't really a competitive one. You just touched on it. It's really more about exploring Earth. It's about exploring your inner self. And that's what the book was really about too. I mean, what I got from the runner's high was, if you can stay true to your core or who you are at your core, then that's going to take you places, literally. And so could you expand on what running means to you?
Yeah. I mean, you're very perceptive. I mean, to me, running is more than just, you know, walking at an accelerated rate. It's the exploration of the outdoors. And it's also an inner exploration of self. And you learn a lot through the movement of your body. And, you know, few sports hold a mirror up to you the way running does. You know, running is exhausting and you want to stop. But you find the grit and the wherewithal to keep going. And you prove to yourself so many things about limitations being kind of self-contrived. You know, if we just can get out of the way of our own self-contrived limitations, we can run forever. And that's something I've learned. So running has taught me a lot of things. It's also rejuvenated and renewed me. I mean, you know, who hasn't come home after a horrible day at the office or wherever, and, you know, had the weight of the world on your shoulders and laced up your shoes and, you know, walk back in the door an hour or two later and suddenly the world looks, you know, much better.
Had you explored the limitations of your inner resolve before you found running at 30? Or was that something that really held the mirror up to you for the first time in that way?
I think, you know, running, I think if you run a marathon or an ultra marathon, especially, it is such a deeply personal experience. You know, they say that, or I say that, you know, running a marathon or an ultra marathon, it builds character, but it also reveals it. So, you know, I'm 100% Greek, and, you know, the Oracle at Delphi, you know, said, "Know thyself." And I think a lot of people don't know thyself because they don't push themselves. Until you're outside of your comfort zone, you're not really learning who you are. And running is a very easy and convenient way and simple way to get outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, it's funny you say simple, because at one point in your book, you said, running an ultra is simple. All you have to do is not stop. It's classic. And so, no, it sounds like you've been following your true North Star for a while now, you know, for a majority of your life. But I really found it super fascinating because you actually opened up in your book a little bit about how you struggle with your identity too. I mean, that's something that I think is relatable for people. You asked yourself, you know, if it wasn't for running, what would I be doing? And I think there's courage and bravery in revealing that type of thought. So how have you coped with that? And what's your advice for anyone listening who is struggling with that right now?
Yeah, no, it's a reckoning with self. And, you know, I think the only person that, you know, you need to be true to is the person you see in the mirror every morning. And that's the only person you have to answer to. And, I'm a runner. That's all I am. I love to run. I love everything about running. It's simple. It's straightforward. It's not rocket science, if you will, but it's who I am. Mm. And I've come to live with those terms. I mean, it's easier if you're, you know, in a more traditional sort of role. I'm a rocket scientist, or I'm a lawyer, or, you know, I'm a doctor. But for a guy my age to say, well, I'm a runner, you know, people raise their eyes like, what?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I've heard you mention before that your biological age is much lower than your chronological age. How has keeping such a steady regimen for you shifted your perspective on the aging process?
You know, I think it's slowed it down in so many ways. You know, we know that running can preserve your life for a lot of reasons, health reasons. We know that diet is especially important. So I pay really close attention to my diet and to my exercise routine. And I think that to your point, that your chronological age and your biological age are two different things. And more people are tuning into this. And I think that, you can put someone that's my age next to me that doesn't exercise and doesn't run and doesn't have a good diet, and we will look physically, 10 or 20 years different.
You look fantastic. How old are you?
I'm closer to 60 than 50.
Wow. All right. Wow.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And you know what else will keep people alive is if they don't really always get caught up in the same routine every day. And again, one of the things from both of your books that I gathered was your disdain for the mundane and how the same old routine kills your soul pretty quickly. So, you know, when you're not running, what are you actually doing day to day to stay satisfied, you know, with your psyche and mentally? Like, how do you switch up your routine?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm an author. So Runner's High is my fifth book. So I'm writing quite a bit. I have other writing assignments outside of just my books. So I spend a lot of time writing. I also, you know, I've become somewhat of a businessman because I've taken a joy and an interest in being an entrepreneur. Mm. So I work with a couple different companies that I've invested in to help them grow and strategize. I spend a lot, quite a bit of time doing that. I'm also pretty into charity. So I do a lot of charity work. It's not hard to occupy a day for me. I stay pretty active. Yeah.
Are you able to work through problems while you're running, or does running require your total focus when you're in the act of it? Like, can you write, can you think about your businesses while you're running, or are you just thinking about the next line down the road?
You know, sometimes both. And that's what I love about running. You can think about everything, or you can think about nothing. You can tune out and just be in the present, you know, the here and now, in the moment, or you can work through problems. Running is a great forum for problem solving. I think a lot of people do that, and I certainly do that. It's also a great form for writing. You know, there's a saying, motion stirs emotion, and I have some of my clearest thoughts when I'm running. I think a lot of people would say they do as well. So I dictate into my phone a lot of the passages of my book, and then I just type them up when I get home.
That explains a lot. That explains a lot, because when I was reading A Runner's High, I literally felt as if I was right there with you every step of the way, just how tough it was. I mean, this is a book that really talks about how tough some of these races are. I mean, if you think about it, you ran your first ultra in 1993, your first 100-mile Western States in 1994, and you've been doing these races in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and you're probably going to be doing it in your 60s. You've run across the country in both directions. My question to you is, do you ever use a car?
You know, I haven't owned a car in over a decade. It's funny. Wow. I was sponsored by Volkswagen, and I gave them the car back, and I ended the sponsorship because I felt like a fraud. You know, they gave me this car, and I was driving it. I drove it 1 year, I think 1,200 miles in a year. So I just, wow. I didn't feel like it was very authentic on my behalf to be promoting a vehicle when I never use a car. So yeah. I came back to them. That was 10 years ago. I haven't owned a car since.
Wow.
You know, one of the things is I can feel your entrepreneurial spirit, and Jay and I sitting in this seat. I know that you've worked on all of your partnerships and all of your sponsorships, just that grittiness that's required there. I think if you can dive into how you accomplish some of that, our audience would really appreciate that.
Yeah. You know, there's a saying, life is a dance between making it happen and letting it happen. You know, a lot of times we work so hard and we try so hard and it seems forced and we're not getting those returns. So sometimes it's a matter of just letting it happen and, you know, finding that right dance move between the two is really an art. And how do you learn this art? Well, you learn it through a lot of failure, you know, of trying and having partnerships not work out. You learn ways to make them actually work out. So through trial and error, you know, through having the courage of failing and getting back up and trying again, that's how you learn the process.
And embracing the suck, right?
I say, you know, fail boldly.
Yeah.
Failure is such a great tool for learning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, what advice would you give to someone that maybe is afraid to fail? Maybe like they're not in great shape right now after spending a year in quarantine. They may be looking at someone like you and your incredible routine and just feeling like that's so far out of reach. What advice might you give to them to help them get the ball rolling and actually, you know, give themselves a fighting chance of cycling up in the right direction after cycling in the wrong direction for maybe the past year?
You know, it takes courage. I mean, it's not failure that stops people. It's the fear of failure. So you have to have the courage to get in the game and, you know, and it takes resolve. And, you know, as you get older and you have more failures, you know, you start to experience a headwind versus a tailwind. And sometimes it's hard. It takes a lot of energy to get out of bed, you know, to keep trying when something doesn't work out. And just have it, you know, to me, I just learned to laugh at the experience and love the experience and really love the suck. You know, when things are really shitty and it falls apart, to really at night lay in bed and just and love it. You know, you're alive. You know, you've experienced incredible emotions. It might be negative emotions, but those emotional highs and lows are what makes living worth living.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Speaking of emotions, I think something that I found interesting was how, you know, you talk about just going hard every day. You talk about setting a goal, accomplishing, repeating it. And I just think that there's so many lessons that you shared in your book around perseverance and commitment, overcoming obstacles. All of that can be applied to life. You know, one thing I didn't know until I read your book was I didn't know how much women excelled at ultras. I know you were sharing several stories in the book, especially around a person named Anne Transon, I believe it was.
Anne Transon, yeah.
Yeah, and she would beat like 99% of the men in the field with these races. I mean, what could you, you know, take from the inspiration around how women do so well in ultras? And what are some of the other trends in the sport right now? Because it may seem like it's gaining popularity, but it's probably still an underground kind of low key kind of sport. So, you know, what are some of the trends that you're seeing in the sport right now?
Well, I mean, ultra marathoning is very egalitarian, as you said. Women compete with men, and in certain distances, like a 200 miles, women are actually more competitive than men. So men are at a disadvantage to women.
It's fascinating.
How many sports can you say that? And it's a tough ass physical sport. It's not like it's, you know, chess or something. I mean, this is a brutally physical sport that, you know, gruels you down, and women are better at it at longer distances. So I think that's part of the appeal to me, that, you know, we're on equal footing, the sexes. You know, the other trend with ultramarathoning is just the popularity. It's, you know, the first year I ran an ultramarathon in 1993, I think there were 3,500 finishers in North America. And, okay. In 2019, there was something like 135,000 finishers. So the sport
Wow. Is
crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
But when you think about it, there's still, you know, there are something like 50 million runners in the U.S. It's still a very small, you know, subset of the population that's running ultra marathons. And, you know, the other trend that's really upended the sport, especially in the last, you know, five or six years, is how many elite younger athletes have gotten into the sport.
Mm.
So these are, you know, men and women with, you know, collegiate backgrounds. A lot of them are Olympic marathon trials qualifiers.
Mm.
So they're very, very fast, and they're dominating. You know, at first people said, well, they'll be, you know, good at these shorter distances, like at a 50K. And these younger folks started winning 50Ks.
Yeah.
And they started winning 50 milers, and now they're winning 100 milers.
Wow.
So the sport has become much more professionalized, much more competitive in a lot of ways. But still, you know, during an ultramarathon, most people are just defining success as finishing. You know, mm-hmm. they might watch the winners and be amazed at the winners, but they're really in it for their own unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, the passion of the sport is still in the back of the pack. You know, people that are just struggling just to get to that finish line before the cutoff time.
Absolutely.
I love that. And I'm sure it's an experience for people that are racing, and then all of a sudden they see you, you know, fly by them. That's another experience. Just be in the race just for that. You know, you might run into Dean, or you might see Dean pass you.
I'm curious, how much more involved is the prep for an ultra marathon than a marathon? I know a marathon is already an incredible feat in and of itself, but what does it look like preparing for an ultra?
It's really a paradigm shift to me. You know, when you're standing at the start of a marathon, you know, it's kind of quantifiable. I mean, it's a long distance. It's 26.2 miles. But you kind of know, like, the end's going to come in a few hours. Like, I'm going to get there. It's going to hurt. There's going to be times when it sucks, but I'm going to make it, you know. Where an ultramarathon, it's more like a sense of exploration. Like, okay, I'm going to be out here for 8 or 9 or 10 or 20 or 30 hours.
Wow. Right.
Yeah.
It's going to take a long time. Slow down, you know, take it step by step. It's just a totally different mindset going into an ultra versus a marathon.
And it sounds like you also have an ability to flip the switch in your head, because I know when you get to the starting line, you usually say, church is now in session. So, I mean, it's just one of those things where I feel like you have so many different mindset, the ability to tap into different mindsets, and you play yourself these specific mental tracks that get you through these tough times. And so when I think about the runners who the potential runners, these are the people that are not really doing anything. They're carrying the weight of the world all day long on their shoulders. They think that if they're running, they're really running away from something because they've been taught that. And I just think that if they just started running, I mean, there's so much potential for them that they need to start exploring it. And that's why having you on the show is like, it's really going to change the game for a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a quote in the book that is just, you know, running is worthwhile in itself. And
exactly.
I really believe that. Yeah, you don't need to quantify it. You don't need to wear a watch every time and measure. You don't need to say, I got to go out for my 1 hour run because I need my exercise. Just find joy in running itself. You know, make it play. If running can become play, then, you know, you're in a good place.
Arjun mentioned your mental tracks a moment ago. Like, where does your mind go when you're in the most grueling bouts of, say, an ultra marathon? Like, do you land on a mantra? Do you, as we talked about a few beats ago, try to clear your head entirely? Like, you know, when you're in like the thickest of the weeds, what is your mind trained on?
You know, people say, what do you think about when it gets really tough? And you know, I don't think. I mean, when you start to think is when you get yourself in trouble. Because you know, you overthink. It's just, you know, you might be totally laid out at mile 60 and still have 40 miles to go. And it's so demoralizing and overpowering that if you think about it too much, you know, you're just going to DNF. So instead, I just try to be in the present moment of time and the here and now. And I try to put the blinders on to the future. So don't think about anything in the future and don't reflect on the past. Just focus on taking your next step to the best of your ability. And then take your next step to the best of your ability. And that's kind of what's going through my head. I'm going to take the next step as best I can. Okay. And my next step. And my next step. And it really requires some discipline because your mind wants to wander. I mean, let's face it, our minds are active. And
totally.
Constantly sidetracked, right? We're thinking constantly, we're thinking. And to turn that off and just be in the present and in here and now and think about just one thing, taking your next step, it requires some disciplined thought. And it requires coming back to that one thing, you know, when your mind starts to wander. But if you can put yourself in that kind of zone, you can go for a long time. You get through a lot of tough situations.
I believe it.
That's advice for anything, really, just taking that next step. And I know that you're all about being the best animal possible. I think it's fascinating because even if you think about a sport like golf, golf requires you to only think about that one shot that's in front of you. You can't think about the shot that just occurred, and you can't think about necessarily the shot that's about to occur. So that presence and that ability to just transcend time and space by staying present, I think there's an overlap there too, from the golfing world to the running world in that mental space as well.
Yeah, I'm not much of a golfer, so yeah. I don't know.
No worries. I'm just saying that that's one of those things where, you know, there's moments where you can transcend being a human being. And maybe when you just think about the next step, that's the way to do it. Because I'll tell you, when I run, I think about you. Like, I think about what will Dean do, or I think about, like, what is Goggins going to do in this situation? Those are the types, that's the type of inspiration I get when I'm running. I haven't gotten to the ability to just focus on my own steps. I'm thinking about people like you right now.
Yeah, I mean, just know that, you know, both Goggins and I have groveled like you would not believe. And we've eaten our pride, you know, we've turned off the ego and we've grunted through a lot. And it's the same for anyone. And if someone's untrained, just to get to the finish of a 5K can be what it's like for me to get to the finish of an ultra marathon. It's the same sort of mental, you know, difficulty that anyone experiences. And some people are just more willing to suffer. You know, and Goggins is certainly one such individual. And I think I'm the same, you know, David and I have raced together. We're friends. And I think our mindset is the same in a lot of ways. I think he's a bit more of a fighter than I am. I mean, I always say I'm a lover, not a fighter. So, you know, he tends to get really gritty and visceral, where when I get into difficult situations, I tend to laugh more and just kind of get jocular about it, just kind of make fun of the difficulty. But we both have our strategies for getting through tough times.
That's very interesting. Laughing through it. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, when things really suck, you smile and laugh and just see what it does to you. Just laugh at it and embrace it. And it changes everything.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. I used to hate roller coasters growing up, and I went on a roller coaster one time with my older cousin, and, you know, we were kind of like inching up the track, and I was maybe like 7 or 8 at the time. So I was like in tears. He's like, man, you just got to smile. Like, just put a smile on your face. I know you don't want to smile, but literally just like force yourself to smile right now, and you will have a different experience on the way down. And he was totally right.
I'm going to die, so laugh.
Yeah, exactly. It's hilarious. That's hilarious. You know, so I think most people are inspired by great human achievement, and you're living proof of what's capable. So, I mean, I urge people to pick up A Runner's High. I think it's an absolutely gripping story. I urge people to follow you on Instagram. Your handle is UltraMarathonMan. And as we get close to wrapping up here, you know, I wanted to read 3 more quick quotes from your book that could change the course of someone's life who's listening right now. The first one that stuck out was, inaction becomes permanent. The second one was, perhaps the only tragedy approaching that of a young life cut short is that of a long life unlived. And the last one that I thought was worth sharing was our actions in life ultimately shape who we are, though perhaps our inactions exert more of an everlasting influence. Do you have any other secrets that you would like to share that could set people up for a more fulfilled life or for success?
Yeah, just get out the door. Just execute. And, you know, when it comes to running, how many people listening to this have said, there's been so many days where I just do not want to, I do not want to run. I come home from work or from wherever. All I want to do is sit on the couch, have some pizza and a beer. And if you can get, if you can maintain the self-discipline just to get out the front door and run down your driveway, that does it all. I mean, when have you ever gotten back from a run feeling worse than when you started out?
No, never.
It's never, never. Happened. No.
Yeah. So if you can just get yourself out the door, it'll build on itself. But it's not easy to do. And that's what I tell people. Just get out the door.
I love that. So I will leave you with one final question. Last month, we asked guests what they thought a modern masterpiece was, but starting with this episode and specifically starting with you, because we do know that you want to be the best animal possible. Other than yourself, Dean, if you could be any other animal for a day, what would you be?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably a barracuda. How's that? Has anyone answered barracuda?
I don't know. I don't think anyone will. That's fascinating.
Just such a brilliant animal, but also a savage animal.
Yeah.
Majestic in appearance, but hungry as ever.
What's your experience with barracudas?
I used to be a spear fisherman.
No way. Wow.
Having a lot of encounters with barracudas. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. You said they're brilliant. Are they intelligent fish?
Yeah, the way they hunt is brilliant. And they're brilliant. I mean, they underwater, they look magnificent. I mean, they sparkle and they shimmer. Yeah. Wow. And they move. I mean, they move faster than your eye can track. They're so quick.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool. I'm going to be YouTubing barracuda videos after this episode, I think.
Exactly.
I don't know where I came up with that one. But that, yeah. I don't know where you came up with that question. I'm sure you stumped a lot of guests.
That's the first time that we're asking that one. So that's a great first answer. But as you say, you know, anyone could take a true champion gives. So I want to say thank you for giving your time, for sharing your experience, your secrets, for helping us get into your mindset a little bit, and for creating this memorable moment for us. We appreciate it.
Well, I hope one day we can all share some footsteps together. That'd be even better.
That'd be fantastic.
Thanks so much, Dean.
Hey, guys. Have a good day.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can sign up for the Rising Weekly newsletter sent out each week.
Every Friday, we expand on the episode with insights, recommendations, and more.
You can sign up at risingladderly.com.
Thank you.